And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
This week, for the first time since lockdown began 10 weeks ago, schools across the UK reopened to limited amounts of children in preparation for a full reopening. Four preschools at Lutheran churches, St Andrew's in Ruislip, St Paul's in Boreham Wood, Luther Tyndale in Kentish Town, and my own congregation, Seedlings Montessori School at Petswood in Orpington, all reopened on Monday of this week. There was much preparation to be done with cleaning, disinfecting, marking of car parks for social distancing, and perhaps the most difficult of all, obtaining adequate supplies of PPE to reassure parents that we were ready to go. All sorts of risk assessments had to be carried out, but the enthusiasm of the governors, teachers and parents to get back to some sort of normalcy was a joy to see. The COVID crisis is far from over, but we are at last beginning to see at least a side of life that was available to us before this dreadful virus changed our world, possibly forever. Churches are yet to reopen in the UK, and there will have to be changes in communion practice whenever that happens. But we all look forward to the day when we can receive the Lord's gifts at the altar once again. The closure of churches is unlawful. A coalition of Christian bishops and religious leaders have warned as they threaten a judicial review into the decision to keep doors locked. Last week, France's Supreme Court ruled that the French government's absolute ban on religious gatherings in a bid to curb the spread of coronavirus is unlawful and ordered the government to relax restrictions on religious worship. Now, a group of high-profile church leaders and bishops in the UK have written to the government seeking an urgent review of lockdown measures that uniformly ban churches from opening. The pre-action letter, supported by Christian Concern and the Christian Legal Centre, argues that blanket lockdown restrictions imposed on all churches are both unlawful and unnecessary, asking the government to prioritise the reopening of churches as part of their exit strategy. The letter also warns that the forced closure of churches by the state is an extreme interference with human rights, in that it contravenes freedom of thought, belief and religion, and if the government fails to address the matters, they will seek a judicial review of the ban. In their letter, the church leaders state that the current regulations are disproportionate in the circumstances where the overwhelming majority of churches have closed down voluntarily in response to the coronavirus pandemic, and the remainder had introduced far-reaching precautions against infection. The letter says that the claimants are not suggesting that churches should be allowed to function as before the pandemic. Rather, our client's concern is that as a matter of principle, the imposition of anti-epidemic measures in the church is ultimately a matter for church authorities rather than secular state authorities. The letter continued, while the short-term practical difference between state regulation and church self-regulation may be limited in present circumstances, the principle of church autonomy is extremely important in the broader constitutional context and must be protected for the benefit of present and future generations. The principle identified above is important for the simple reason that a believer's worldview is radically different from a non-believer's worldview. Among the list of 24 claimants requesting an urgent meeting with the government include Bishop Michael Nazir Ali, President, Oxford Centre for Training, Research, Advocacy and Dialogue, Oxtrad, and Pastor Matthew Ashimolo, Senior Pastor, Kingsway International Christian Centre, the KICC, and the Reverend Dr. David Hathaway, President of the Eurovision Mission to Europe. Pastor Aid Amuba, MBE, Christian Concern's co-founder and one of the claimants in the letter said, "It cannot be right that at present it is lawful to go to a bike shop, B&Q, visit a chiropractor or dry cleaner and not be allowed to receive Holy Communion or engage in silent prayer in a church." Churches have traditionally been at the centre of the communities, able to offer counsel, prayer and comfort at times of national crisis. They are at the heart of our communities, helping to combat mental health problems, addictions, risk of suicide, domestic violence, poverty, and risk. Churches deliver an essential service to the community, the government should not be putting churches as the lowest priority services for reopening from the lockdown. We look forward to the response from the government to this letter and hope that we can engage with the government to see church ministry prioritised as we start to exit the lockdown. A government spokesman said, "We understand how difficult it is for people of faith not to be able to worship. That's why we are working in partnership with faith leaders through our task force to develop guidance that will enable the phased and safe reopening of places of worship. This work is a priority and we will issue the guidance as soon as it's sensible to do so, ensuring that places of worship have sufficient time to put measures in place to safely welcome worshippers back." Churches should be opened again to help people grieve for loved ones lost to COVID-19 and not kept shut in lockdown long after shops, according to a new survey. The survey's findings showed signs of frustration over places of worship being among the last to open up again. Half of all those surveyed think churches should allow people in again before July the 4th, the current planned opening date. The figure rises to 66% among those who are regular churchgoers. The poll by Savanta Comres on behalf of the National Churches Trust also shows that nearly half of all those surveyed think that once reopened, the most important role for places of worship will be to hold remembrance services for those who died during the COVID-19 pandemic, while 44% think that they are vital for providing a place of private reflection or prayer. Among those who are urging the government to rethink the continuing lockdown is broadcaster and author Sir Michael Palin, a vice president of the National Churches Trust, who said, "Keeping churches closed has taken away what churches do. It has severed their connection with people at a time of great mental anguish for many when they should be open and accessible." MPs have also expressed their concern about church closures. Last week, 20 Conservative MPs wrote to Boris Johnson to urge him to allow churches to open now. The group, led by Sir Peter Bottomley, wrote, "It seems odd that you can go for a walk, enter a busy supermarket, get on a bus, but cannot go to a large, virtually empty for much of the time building." In a second poll for the National Churches Trust, 3/4 of the vicars questioned say that church closures during lockdown has had a negative impact on the community, as not only religious services, but all kinds of welfare and social organisations have been unable to use their spaces. In Liverpool Diocese, which has furloughed some of its curates, vicars are struggling to keep churches going. The Reverend Miranda Threhall Holmes, who is rector of the Three City Centre Churches, said, "I am trying not to panic. We have a lot of organisations that normally use our buildings, and if we don't get their rentals back in a few months, I'm not sure we will be viable. We provide space for organisations like food banks, and if we go, it will be a tragedy for local people." Rural churches have also been hit. According to Canon Rosie Harper, the vicar of St Peter and Paul, Great Missenden, Buckinghamshire, "Our situation is very fragile. Even whole dioceses could go to the wall, and churches will close down." Religious rituals in ancient Judah were carried out amid clouds of potent cannabis smoke, archaeologists have said. Researchers in Israel have found residues of cannabinoids, including tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, the main psychoactive constituent of cannabis, in a shrine of the 8th century BC. They conclude that the black solidified residue, which was found in a shallow depression on the top of a limestone altar, derived from the burning of hashish to stimulate ecstasy in religious rites. The lead author, Aaron Ari of the Israel Museum in Jerusalem, said, "This is the first time that cannabis has been identified in the ancient Near East. Its use in the shrine must have played a central role in the cultic rituals performed there." The shrine was discovered in the 1960s in a fortress at Tel Arad, which guarded the southern border of the biblical kingdom of Judah, and dates from about 750 to 715 BC. The 40 centimeters tall altar on which the cannabis residue was detected in a new chemical analysis was one of two cut limestones flanking the entrance of the Holy of Holies, or in the sanctuary. The findings indicate that the hashish was mixed with animal dung to promote a steady burn. The second altar carried residues of frankincense, which is widely attested in the Bible, but has not previously been scientifically identified in an ancient Levantine context. This would likely have been imported from southern Arabia, the archaeologists said. This resin was mixed with animal fats to burn at the higher temperature required to release its fragrance. Writing in the journal Tel Aviv, the researchers said, "It is likely that the cannabis burnt on the altar was not imported for its smell or therapeutic virtues, but for its mind-altering abilities, expressed only by heating." The Tel Arad shrine, which is now in the Israel Museum, dates from about the time of King Jotham of Judah, whose father, King Uzziah, is said in the Bible to have been afflicted with leprosy after he usurped the priest's prerogative by entering the Temple of Jerusalem to burn incense at the altar. The author suggested that, given its presence in a shrine in a state-owned fort, cannabis was likely to have been used more widely in ancient Judah, including in the Temple of Jerusalem. They noted that the altars they studied were only two of 50 similar examples that have been discovered in the southern Levant. They said, "The presence of cannabis at Arad testifies to the use of mind-altering substances as part of cultic rituals in Judah. The plants detected in this study can serve as an extra-biblical source in identifying the incense used in cultic practices, not only at Arad, but also those elsewhere in Judah, including Jerusalem. Hallucinogenic substances are known from various neighboring cultures, but this is the first known evidence of a hallucinogenic substance found in the kingdom of Judah." A 6-year-old boy walking with his family in Israel found a unique 3,500-year-old clay tablet imprinted with a vivid scene showing a Canaanite guard humiliating a captive. The prisoner on the 1-inch square tablet has his hands tied behind his back in such a way that he is forced to walk upright. He appears emaciated and naked, presumably as an act of insult. The guard walks behind him, better fed and holding the chains. The tablet was found by Imri Elia in Tel Gemma, an ancient Canaanite site on the western edge of the Negev Desert near the Gaza Strip. Tel Gemma is associated with the ancient city of Yerza, one of a number of Canaanite city-states in the 2nd millennium BC, which were independent of each other but paid tribute to the neighboring Egyptian pharaohs. The tablet has no inscription and is the only object of its type known to have been discovered. A century ago, the British archaeologist Sir William Flinders Petrie reported a find that may have been similar in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, but it has since been lost. According to the Bible, the Canaanites were destroyed by the Israelites after Moses led them from captivity in Egypt. New DNA testing, however, has shown that they were among the ancestors of Jews, Palestinians, and other Arabs of today's Levant region. As well as the Israelites and Egyptians, the Canaanites fought with each other, Sar Gainer of the Israeli Antiquities Authority told Haaretz newspaper. "We haven't learnt a thing since Cain and Abel," he said. And finally, Pastor Jamie was giving the children's message during church. For this part of the service, he would gather all the children around him and give a brief lesson before dismissing them for Sunday school. On this particular Sunday, Jamie was using squirrels for an object lesson on industry and preparation. He started out by saying, "I'm going to describe something and I want you to raise your hand when you know what it is." The children nodded eagerly. "This thing lives in trees and eats nuts." No hands went up. "And it is grey and has a long bushy tail." The children were looking at each other, but still no hands were raised. "And it jumps from branch to branch and chatters and flips its tail when it's excited." Finally, one little boy tentatively raised his hand. Jamie breathed a sigh of relief and called on him. "Well," said the boy, "I know the answer must be Jesus, but it sure sounds like a squirrel to me." My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.